last time, although I promise I won't do any supersymmetry calculations. So last time, like what we learned is that the 2D, and also Davide reviewed it, that the 2D n equals 2-2 supersymmetry algebra embedded into the 3D n equals 4 supersymmetry algebra. And then Davide told you today that this thing in fact embeds into the 4D n equals 4 supersymmetry algebra. And then I showed that there were three nilpotent, or maybe I'll say square zeros, maybe better. Square zero supercharges in the 2D algebra. So I called them QA, QB, and QH. And then because these things square to zero in this supersymmetry algebra, when you embed them into any of these, they also end up remaining square zero. So you can use them to do topological twists. And actually, let me just make a little table, which maybe might be helpful. So like one can ask, so you can use them to twist. And then you can sort of ask the question, how many directions or how many translations are in the Q cohomology? So I know that I've used Q both for various supercharges and for question, but I hope that the context makes it clear. Yeah. I know, but I never will. It's too late for me now. Okay, so now so one can just go through and check in these various dimensions. So I told you last time that there's only one translation in the cohomology of QH. So this is why the resulting twisted theory is what we call holomorphic. You basically treat this direction as being your z-bar direction. And so then if you look at fields that are constant with respect to that direction, they'll have to be holomorphic. And then these were two and these were two. So these two theories are totally topological. Then here you kill two, in dimension three, there'll be two translations. So the thing is gonna be topological in one of the directions, and you can use the other one as a del bar. So this one's holomorphic topological, and three and three. And then finally in dimension four, we'll find that it's three, four. Okay. Okay, and so now like the question, and now what we'd like to do is study the twisted field theories. And as a warm up, I just wanna talk about the B model with target X being a Calabi-Yau. So in case you don't know what this means that the structure sheaf and the dualizing sheaf are isomorphic up to some degree shift. Or sorry, whatever. Oh, minus D, yeah, good. It's not gonna be that important which exact shift it was. Okay, and so remember like what we've learned from this thing is that the equations of motion are the space of maps from the Durham stack of our curve. So remember that this thing is the one shifted tangent bundle of our curve together. So this thing is a DG, sorry, is a super manifold or a DG manifold. And then I want to use the Durham differential. And the functions on this thing are just forms. And then I want to turn on the Durham differential. And then with values in T star of X. And like what I'd like to do is I'd like to produce a 2D TQFT out of this in the mathematical sense. So like this thing is just sort of our classical equations of motion. So this thing certainly doesn't tell you, well, it does tell you about the quantum field theory, but you have to like do some work. And so I'm just going to use like the standard mathematical idea of what a TQFT is, where it's just some kind of a functor from some cobordism category into the category of linear two categories. Right? Oh, sorry. Yeah, that's right. So, sorry, actually, no, the category of categories. The two category of categories. That's what I meant to say. Okay, and so the ansatz that people use for trying to construct a functorial TQFT from these equations of motion is that what your object assigns to some manifold should be the geometric quantization, so let me call these things, of the equations of motion on sigma times like some r of the appropriate degree, like in order to make the dimensions be maxed out. Okay. Now let's learn, sorry?
How did that depend on m?
Oh, sorry, m. Thanks. Okay, but this is actually like gotta be a little bit weird because the only thing that you guys know how to do with geometric quantization, if even like you've learned that from this workshop, is how to take an ordinary symplectic manifold, or maybe an odd symplectic manifold, and produce a vector space or a Hilbert space. But I want to be able to get categories and various sorts of things via geometric quantization, and so let me tell you what it is. I mean, yes. Any questions?
So for this, do you mean if m were a point, this would be R2?
Yeah, and then, yeah, so sorry. So these dimensions have to add up to 2. And because this particular thing is a Durham stack, you never even need to care about that R direction anyway. Yeah, so basically, these things are going to add up. Okay, so the first thing is that the AKSZ formalism tells us that maps from M, so let's say that this one, actually let me make these be D, dimension N minus, or 2 minus D, from some two-manifold Durham, and let's assume that this thing is actually compact now. Cross R2 minus D Durham, but this is irrelevant. To T star 1 of X has a symplectic form of degree 1 minus d. And so if you know anything about the way that such a functor is supposed to work, this thing is supposed to send the point, supposed to go to some category. If I take a circle, that's supposed to go to some vector space. And then if I take some interesting two-manifold, That's just supposed to go to some number, say 5.
What do you add on the R minus D direct?
It's basically like Dylan was saying that you need to just like thicken it. Like basically you should always like just consider the germ of your manifold inside of your full dimensional space. So this is just supposed to be like a slight thickening, like this thing is all supposed to be taking place inside of some two-dimensional space, and whatever like M I'm interested in is supposed to be thought of as being embedded in some ambient two-dimensional space, and you just want it to be like a little thicker.
And in the AKS, you always use the compact dimension.
Yeah, well, I mean, depends on like the precise form of the equations, but for this, yeah, it only sees the compact directions. So I'm not going to talk about the open things quite yet. So those things should be giving you not symplectic manifolds, but Lagrangians like Dylan talked about. Okay, so let's like do some like numerology. So if I were on a point, then my equations of motion would have a symplectic form of degree 1. And I want to produce a 1 category. If I put in a circle which has degree 1, then my equations of motion would have a symplectic form of degree 0. And then I'd want to build a vector space, and then I would be happy. Because we know like what geometric, or that geometric quantization would let us do that. And if I wanted to plug in a two manifold, then I'd have a symplectic form of degree minus 1, and then I'd want to get a number. And we know how to do that using like integrals over this, using our minus 1 shifted symplectic structure. And so what we've basically found is that to an n shifted symplectic thing, we want to associate an n category. So like this thing, this geometric quantization by this numerology, this thing should take an n shifted symplectic space. So something with a degree with a symplectic form of degree n to an n category, where I'm going to interpret 0 category as being either set or vector space, because everything's going to be linear, or a minus 1 category should be interpreted as a number.
Justin?
Yes.
Comment on how the structure has entered.
I have not used it at all. So for this, like I have this T star 1 here.
Yeah.
The Calabi-Yau structure is not entering in the symplectic form. At some point, I'm going to like write down some things that will only be true if it's a Calabi-Yau later.
So,
as of yet, I've not used it.
Okay.
Like it's not entered in any way. So the place I'm going to use it is like this is what you need to get an oriented TQFT. Without this condition, you would need to look at manifolds with framing. And it's like pretty unclear to me at the moment exactly. Well, I have some ideas, but like it's pretty unclear to me how to incorporate the framing data into this, like in general into this procedure. And so I would just like to gloss over that.
Right, so you're saying the principle like, is that story is always oriented.
No, I'm saying that the TQFT that I built, I'm not saying anything about M being oriented.
No, I mean, the couple makers, but AKZ for a fixed target just produces an oriented, sort of classical TFT.
Yeah, I don't think that that's true.
It is, and you're saying that the...
Well, I mean, it depends what you mean. It depends like what target. Yeah, so if you say if valued in the category of Lagrangian cobordisms, then it's oriented. Yeah. But quantization won't respect that.
And so you're saying that there's like an anomaly, some amount of gravitational anomaly that gets canceled by this Calabi-Yau condition.
Yeah, that's roughly like what I'm saying. Yeah. I mean I'm not sure exactly like what meaning I want to give to it yet. Like not because just because I don't know. Like that's like one plausible way that seems promising, but I don't know exactly what I want to say. But yeah, you're right. So what Theo was saying, yeah, so maybe I should say a little bit more. So if I consider manifolds with boundary, so you can think of, like, I have some manifold with boundary, and then let's say that my manifold is oriented, so I have, like, an ingoing boundary and an outgoing boundary. So, like, once you have an oriented manifold, you can make sense of whether, you can make sense of, like, inward or outward pointing normal vector. And so then what you would get from such a thing is just a correspondence like this. And then now applying my equations of motion, like what I'm gonna get is I can look at my equations of motion on the inward pointing boundary of M. I can look at my equations of motion on the outward boundary of M. And then now I can also look at my equations of motion on M. And then by these maps are going in the other direction. Right, you include the boundary into your manifold. And then when I apply the equations of motion, that's contravariant, so it flips these things around. And so now, like, what you're gonna get is this thing is a symplectic manifold, this thing is a symplectic manifold, and then this, Dylan told you, is a Lagrangian correspondence. And then, so what Theo said was that if you call this thing a classical quantum field theory, then always the AKSZ construction gives you a functor from 2 Cobb into this category of Lagrangian correspondences. And then, like, the higher morphisms are like Lagrangian correspondences between intersections and so on and so on. And it's always oriented, but when I'm telling you that when I'm going to quantize this thing in a second, I'll need this Calabi-Yau condition to know that it only depends on the orientation on my manifold and not, like, more structure. Okay, so any questions about this? Yeah, so actually, let me tell you one other, oh, sure.
So the statement is that the classical field theory is always oriented.
Yeah.
But there's an orientation anomaly in the quantum.
Yeah, that's what Theo was saying, is that there's an orientation anomaly. That usually just means, like, things didn't go like I expected. So, although, I mean, Davide probably has a better idea. Okay, so let's go look at, like, this ansatz a little bit more. So if I had, like, something where I had, like, a manifold with boundary, then the kind of data that I would expect to get out of this would be, like, some sort of a map from V to V. And so, like, if I extend my ansatz, like, the thing that I would expect to associate to Lagrangian correspondences would be like maps. Or, like, if I had one of, like, lower dimension, if I had, like, an interval with boundary, then you'd expect that to give you, like, a functor from C to C. Okay. So I could try and, like, give you like a procedure for doing this in general, but it's kind of a pain like to describe, and I would need to talk about gerbs and, like, all sorts of things that I don't want to talk about. But you don't actually need to know that. Like, there's actually, like, just, like, a pretty small ansatz you can use to get quite a ways. So the ansatz for the way that this ought to work, and what's enough to do almost every single field theory you'll ever look at in practice, is that the geometric quantization of an n-shifted cotangent bundle should just be what I call NQ co of X. So this is, like, something that we're gonna define. when this thing is a minus one, so when this thing is just a minus one shifted cotangent bundle, you'd expect to just get like the number one. When this thing's a cotangent bundle, you'd expect to just get functions on x. So these cases are kind of degenerate. When you have a one shifted cotangent bundle, you should expect to get just ordinary category of, actually maybe I just want to call it n co. I'm going to do that. I'm going to be kind of agnostic as to whether I want q co or co. And then the highest that we'll ever go today is if I do something that's like two shifted, then you'd expect to get what people call like q co. So what you'd want to get is what people call quasi-coherent sheaves of categories.
But what I want to get is coherent sheaves of categories, right?
Well, I mean, that's why I put the Q. But yeah, what I want to get is coherent sheaves here and coherent sheaves of categories, but I don't want to say what that means. And when X is affine, you don't even need X as affine for this. So what you would expect this thing to be is that quasi-coherent sheaves is a tensor category, just like under tensoring sheaves, and you just expect this thing to be modules for that. And that's as high as we'll ever like need to go, like with this ansatz.
Sorry, you said you're giving the definition of.
I'm telling you what it is for these. Yeah, I'm telling you what it is, and you can sort of guess is what the. Yeah, so quasi-coherent sheaves on X is a tensor category. Then like one can look at categories that are modules over that tensor category. Maybe a better way of saying it is that when your space is affine, you could just ask for a map from the ring of functions on your manifold into the center. And like that would also be a good answer. I don't really want to get technical. Like I'd like to get to some physics in a minute. Okay, so this is like the ansatz for what's going to happen here. It turns out that this is going to be almost enough to do the B model. Okay, so let's go ahead and see what this thing tells us if we look at the B model. Maybe in a minute I'll say more about like a more technical way that one can define this, but I think the real lesson is that you don't need to actually know anything about how this procedure works to guess. Yeah, so this one, like the real answer that you'd expect to get is, yeah, this KRS, the Kapustin-Rosansky-Salina two category, but this is like a approximation to that, it's the only one we've got right now. But yeah, people have been working to give a better answer here. Yeah, so this is like not the.
Sorry. The way you understand it's Q-co modules is because you can think of.
So you take the global sections.
The base of the cosine bundle and put it on a.
Yeah.
Endomorphisms of that.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. You look at interfaces between any other boundary conditions, the basis of the connection.
Yeah, yeah. So the way that I'm writing it down in this way I'm taking global sections of the category, and then it continues to have this.
And the improvement of this category would have to do with including finance too, or.
It's about like knowing what to do when you quantize like interesting Lagrangians in this cotangent bundle. Like, what do you do with like shifted forms? And like the most interesting thing is like, so really like this is only Z graded, and like you might have Lagrangians in here that are not C star, like that aren't equivariant for some C star action where you have a weight two thing. And then these objects are going to be totally mysterious, like in this formulation.
Those will not be z-graded.
So everything here is z-graded. It was like.
And the Kapustin-Rosansky-Salina, is that z-graded or z-2-graded?
I think really you want to do z-2-graded. like there's like a lift to the Z graded, but it's not so good. But like this is just an approximation. Like this works very well for some field theories, but it's not going to handle every single one. Okay, so let's see. So what did we learn about the B model? So if I want to know what I should assign to a point, so then I should look at the equations of motion on a point, but that's just T star 1. So this thing tells us that you should assign, you know, quasi-coherent sheaves on X. There were, you know, different choices of functional analysis I could have made here, where I could have chosen coherent sheaves and sort of included this in a different way, or distributions, but let's just be easy.
You might want to erase that equals sign.
I'm sorry?
That first equals sign maybe is not.
Sorry, should be the geometric quantization of this, which is the geometric quantization that is equal. Yeah, okay. There was lots of ways I could have solved that. Okay. So then now, like, one can try and study the space of states on the circle. So this thing is now the geometric quantization of maps from the circle to ROM. I'm just going to drop all my non-compact directions because they don't matter. T star 1 of x. And turns out that you can write this thing down as, sorry, the cotangent bundle of maps from S1 to ROM to X. Yeah, whatever. So now we're in a situation that we know what to do. So people usually call this thing like the derived loop space of X, if you've ever seen it. So when X is a scheme, this thing is actually also equal to the minus one shifted tangent bundle of X. And like one answer of what one could assign to a circle is the global sections over L of X of this structure sheaf. And the state operator correspondence tells you that when, so the manifestation of the state operator correspondence is that when X is Calabi-Yau, this thing is linear dual to the Pauli vector. Is that right?
You mean OLX, so the structure sheaf of the derived loops.
Sorry?
You have the T star X in the structure.
Sorry. That should be an L of X, of course. Yeah.
That's the whole shape of the
derived. Yeah.
You mean that that thing is dual to the Pauli vector fields?
Right, because this thing shouldn't be the Pauli vector fields because this thing's the minus one shifted tangent bundle. Right, and that has forms. So this is basically like forms, not Pauli vector fields. If I had done better, if I had assigned this thing to be co, then the Calabi-Yau condition would have allowed me to know. So if I had,
Can I pause for a second? Sorry, I wasn't going to say. If you don't do the linear dual thing to get Pauli vector fields, then what you have is like the Hochschild homology of your category. And
that's right.
And you're saying that the Calabi-Yau structure allows you to turn that into Hochschild cohomology.
Yeah, that's right. Up to a shift. Yeah, so maybe like that's like the slickest way of saying it. So I guess, yeah, so that would make these things up to some
shit. Always identified with differential, polymorphic differential forms, right? HDR theorem. And then in a special case when it's going to be, you can.
Yeah, that's what I said. So it's always forms, because that's what functions on this thing are. And then sometimes, when you're Calabi-Yau, you can make these things be the same. And that's why I made the Calabi-Yau assumption at the beginning. So what happens, so I guess for experts, since people have already asked me. So in general, there are lots of different, you need to consider frame circles. And framings are basically given by, of the circle are basically given by maps from pi 1 to SO2. So in general, you have a Z's worth of circles. And if you want to quantize the nth framed circle, so let me just say really quickly. So a framing is a choice of so you look at the trivial R2 bundle, you need to, basically it's giving like two vector fields, or sorry, two perpendicular vectors at every point on this circle in a continuous way. And there's the zeroth frame one would just have like what's called the blackboard framing, where you just choose this choice at every single point on your circle. So it doesn't change. And then what one could do is if I had an element in pi 1 of SO2, I could just multiply my pair of vectors by my matrix, and then like that would like let me rotate it around. So like that would give me like a bunch of different framings. I could just alter the trivial one by multiplying it by any element here. And so like up to topology, like that tells me how many different framed circles I've got. And what it turns out that like the way that you want to do this is you want to do exactly the same thing, except for the answer that you really want to get is I shriek WX. So this is like a more general thing, but it doesn't follow from this like formalism. Like basically you have to think hard about like what, not that I've given you any formalism, but like this is like something like you have to like think about in order to know. It's not something that like just is obvious. And pi is the map from L of X.
But it's, we were taking like a normal framing of M inside of M times R or whatever.
Yeah. So just think of this thing as like living inside of the board, living in the board. Like the zero would just be the blackboard framing. So at every point you choose this pair of vectors in R2. And then for any other one, if I have a family of like orthogonal matrices, then I can multiply this choice by my matrix at each point, and I will get like a different framing. And so that gives me like, so for every element, everything in here, I can get another guy.
What does upper shriek
mean? So it's the
growth and deke.
It's the dual pullback, the growth and deke dual pullback.
So what does it mean? And this is all derived stuff, right? I don't know.
Yeah, it's defined. and it behaves in the way you'd expect, like it pulls back. So it commutes with shriek tensors. So these are actually star tensors. But it commutes with shriek tensors, and it pulls dualizing sheaves back to dualizing sheaves. It's like the way that you should, you can ask later, but it's not interesting. Yeah?
So in the geometric quantization story.
Yes.
The story we sort of grew up with, the same take care that I had, but the story was about how you needed like a polarization, which is from just the fibers of the star.
Yes.
And you need a pre-quantum line bundle, which in this case, those are like something like the modules on the base.
Yes.
This thing you're telling
No, it shouldn't be on the base. You actually like want a line, you actually want a line bundle with connection on the whole space.
Right, but I think if I take a D module on the base, I get a favor way to pull it back.
Yeah, that's true.
And so that I probably you're telling me there was some general thing like, there was some general, like you said, formalism for pushing and pulling pre-quantum line, pre-quantum journeys, or whatever they're called.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe you're telling me that if I do that with some framing dependence, this is quantum line level of compute?
Yeah. Well, actually, I don't know. I like basically right now, I don't know what the right reason to do this is. This is like just an aside. Like right, like it's like if you want to get the right answer, like this is the thing that your formalism needs to get. I don't have a preferred way of getting this right now. I don't know how to do framings. No one knows how to do. No one who I know knows how to put in framings by hand.
Can I bother you? So for the sheen stuff, make sense. The sheen stuff will make sense if you work with it.
Sorry.
Just don't say shriek again.
You need to work with info for this to make sense somehow?
Yeah, that's...
Confused because... But then if your info is not necessarily proper... Wait, what's happening? I know that the answers you're getting for like hope, you know, the bookshelf technology and stuff are correct if you take Q-code.
So for INCO and QCO, you get the same answer for the Hochschild homology, and then you get a slightly different, sorry, cohomology, and then you get a slightly different answer for the homology. They're all given by sections of some bundle here. Like, I just don't want to talk about it. Like, let's just like go on. Like, I mean, it's like we'll never get to anything interesting. Like, if we do this, like I'm explicitly. So I've talked to some of you personally about like how like to make some of this like more rigorous. I'm explicitly like not doing that now, and I like don't want to even attempt. I want to like actually like get to something. I don't want to talk about any way of making this rigorous. Okay, this is an on, so like this thing is an on sots at the moment, right? Like that just means wild guess. Like there's like a way of like making it better, like of like trying to like make this idea rigorous, but I don't want to do that. I just want to like plug in some field theories and see what I get by using the wild guess. Sorry, I feel like I'm being very hostile, but. I am happy to answer these questions after, I just don't want to derail now. Okay, so I think that this gives like some idea of like how this works, but I haven't actually like really tried to like connect this thing to physics in sort of any way. Okay. Okay. So let's talk about line operators in 2D. And then just try and see what this onsots would let you guess about like what line operators are about. So a physicist would tell you that if you want to study line operators, that what you ought to do is you ought to look at the length of your line. So you want to look, take like a little tube around your line. So I'm in dimension one. And then what I should try and do as we write this whole thing, so in this case, the length of my line is the zero sphere. And now you want to try and rewrite your theory as maps into maps from the link. So let's try and do this in our example. So this space, if we want to think about it like up to topology, this thing is really just a copy of the real numbers that are strictly greater than zero times my link. Right, so that's basically giving me either a direction, either left or right, and then like a radius. And then also I have my line direction. So I'll draw that line in green. And then this thing you can think of So now let's give like this circle like actually like some small radius, and what one can try and do is like rewrite the theory. Oh, actually, sorry, maybe I don't even want to do that. So then now, like what one can do is you can rewrite your theory. This basically maps from r greater than zero across this green r into maps. Sorry, DRAM. Into maps from this S0 DRAM into T star 1 of X. Right, so I'm just using like the mapping, the fact that I can write this space topologically as a product, and then I'm just trying to use like a mapping sec adjunction. So like this is like what a physicist would tell you to do. And then like one can basically just place this thing through. Maps from S0 to ROM are pretty stupid.
Can I ask, what was the original thing that you were trying to
use? I was trying to study like the what are the line operators in the B model using this ansatz. So what I'm telling you is by the state operator correspondence, a line operator is the same thing as a state or like a boundary condition on this, giving like a state on this tube. And so you rewrite this whole thing, right? And so this is just my, so this thing is just a fancy word for my equations of motion on a zero sphere. And so what we'd expect is that the category of line operators, so at first we didn't even completely know that it would be a category, but we can read that off by looking at the dimension of the symplectic structure. Like what kind of a thing line operators form would depend on the dimension. So we would find that the category of line operators by our ansatz is just Q co of X times X, okay? So the point of these exercises, I just want to let you learn how to use this ansatz to like read off rough guesses at what physicists would mean when they say things like, what's the category of line operators in the B model? Yeah?
Is that because the maps from input just goes away?
Well, no, because it's maps from 2 points. So there's 2 points, so one map from 2 points.
But I mean before that.
Where?
From the R.
Oh, here?
That just subtracts away?
Yeah. And this point just all contracts away. Sorry, this was also, yeah, these were both deramed, right? So it didn't matter. Okay, so that tells us, so this would tell you that if I wanted to know what the category of line operators are, I should evaluate my theory on the circle. So this is sort of the generalization of the thing that you'd heard a bunch of times, that if I wanted to know what the local operators are, like the point operators, then I should look at, sorry, my point would be in green, then I should look at states around the circle, and then that was what I was saying the Z of a circle was, and then we got Pauli vector fields like we expected under a Calabi-Yau condition and up to my lies about Q-co versus N-co, which were definitely lies, but hiding. Okay, so now let's like try and guess like what like a physicist would mean like if they said like the like what is the trivial line? And then we'll apply this to like a more interesting field theory. But I just wanted to do this like super slow in this one example where we knew what all the answers were already. Okay. So the trivial line is supposed to be some object in this category. And what it's going to come from is that, like, basically, whenever people ask you, like, what is the trivial operator, they always mean, what's the one where you just allow your fields to continue through to this line with, like, no singularity? And, like, the geometric way that we would talk about that is we would just say that you have the interval including into the circle. Sorry, the circle includes into the interval. And this thing induces a Lagrangian correspondence from the equations of motion on the interval mapping to the equations of motion on the circle. And then this one we've already identified. And this one ends up just being, so this is just contractible. So you'll just get T star one of a point. And then this map is just ends up being like the diagonal. OK, another way that one can write this is this thing is also the conormal, the one-shifted conormal to the diagonal map from x to x cross x. Like, you can just do some symplectic geometry and check that this is true. OK, so we've never quantized a Lagrangian before. But let's go ahead, but I think like, but the best ansatz, the best guess for like what one should do if you have the geometric quantization of the conormal bundle, the n-shifted conormal bundle to some variety y mapping to x. So these are different than the x and y that I've been using before. Is that this thing should, and so let's say that my map is f from y to x, then your best guess is that this thing should just be the push forward of the n structure sheaf of y. Like that's like what your ansatz should be for the geometric quantization, where for minus one shifted things, this doesn't really make much sense. For zero shifted things, you'd expect this thing to be like the constant function one, which won't always push forward because it would be like distributional. Like things are bad kind of in the low dimensions, but then once you finally get to one shifted things, then this thing is just the ordinary structure sheaf. So n O of y just be like the ordinary structure, sorry, one O of y supposed to be the ordinary structure sheaf, and then two O of y is supposed to be q co of y thought of as a module over q co of x using the map f. Okay, so this is like what things would get. So then like what this thing is gonna tell us is that we'd expect, that like what we'd expect to get is the geometric quantization of this thing. Is that this thing should just be like the diagonal, So this thing should just be like the diagonal bimodule or the diagonal copy of O of X thought of as a kernel. And again, if you wanted to do inco, you might need to use like the change this thing out for the dualizing sheaf, but like. Okay, so then now let's just check the fact that we, well, so there's a check that like one should make that you should always like see whether it holds, is that you should expect that if you take the endomorphisms of the trivial line, like one should recover the space of local operators that we computed before, and that's just some like easy operation, like thing in six functors. Okay, so I hope this example was super easy. And then we'll try and do, like, actually, let me try and do one other thing. So Davide talked about compactifying boundary conditions on a circle.
Just now, add one more thing. There's another really basic check you should do, which you've sort of implicitly done. The category of lines is a tensor category, and this had better be the identity for the tensor product. And it is.
Sorry, but to be clear, the tensor product is coming from the it's not the tensor product. So the tensor structure on lines. Should come from like this thing.
Oh, great. Sorry, this is much fancier, but.
Anyway, it's not that big of a.
Use that.
Oh, sorry. Actually, maybe I shouldn't have. Wait, is that what I want? Yeah, sorry. This thing shouldn't be filled in, it should be an open. So you have to be a little careful. But this thing, yeah. You have to check that it is a unit under the right thing. Okay, so then, like, what does it mean? To compactify a boundary condition on S0. Okay, so Dylan taught us like what boundary conditions are, or at least like one big source of boundary conditions. So Dylan taught us the boundary conditions, like some big class of boundary conditions are just Lagrangians in the target. And AKSC,
are there more?
I will tell you in just a second. Tells us that maps from S0, or actually maps from any compact manifold into a Lagrangian is also Lagrangian. So then one can just geometrically quantize this thing.
Should be an M in the first slot of map.
Oh, sorry. That should be an M. And then let me actually just assume that my thing is super easy. Let me assume it's a cotangent bundle. Or a conormal bundle, because those are the only ones that I've told you how to do. And in fact, you can actually also read off that this thing will itself be a conormal. To maps from M to Y into maps from M to X. And so that thing tells you that the geometric quantization of such a guy is just going to be the push forward of the structure sheaf tensored with itself of Y box tensor. O of Y, right? Because maps, because in the case I was looking at, it was like maps from a circle, from a zero sphere. So you get two copies of L, so you get L times L mapping index times X, and you can push forward the structure sheaf here. Okay, so whatever. So now let me, of O of Y times Y. Okay. So now let me get back to Benji's question. So Benji was asking, like, are there other boundary conditions? I think, like, to first order classically, like, you would say no. Like, there are only Lagrangians in the target. But that turns out not to be true. Like, classical boundary conditions, there's basically only Lagrangians in the target. When one is studying line operators, then you end up looking at like Lagrangians in like this space. And like these things like will have a different physical interpretation. These are not the boundary conditions of the theory. Lagrangians in here would be the lines.
Well, I didn't understand that last sentence.
So I guess like Lagrangians in T star 1 of X, these have the interpretation as boundary condition. like when you do one of these rewriting games so that you like rewrite it like this, then one can study Lagrangians in this thing, and those have the interpretations as actually being the lines. And then like Davide would say some lines are compactified boundary conditions. Those would be exactly the ones that came through this construction where I mapped from S0 into some line in my target. Does that make sense? Like what the language is supposed to mean? Like this is what I'm trying to teach you is actually the language. So that's so this is confusing.
Maybe just repeat it one more time.
Yeah. So a look. So the look.
Also, be clear in 3D when there isn't so much ambiguity between boundaries and lines. The zero sphere.
Yeah. The zero sphere is too stupid. Okay. So let's actually just maybe let's go up in dimension and it'll be easier. Okay. So I hope that this was somewhat useful. The reason I did this is because now we're going to analyze a theory where this isn't clear immediately, but we're going to use the ansatz to sort of tell us what we think 3D n equals 4 theory should be about. And let me just go ahead and like just look at the B twist for a minute, and then we can look at the A twist later if we want to. So we've not really talked about like what data 3D n equals 4 theories are supposed to be about. And so I'm just going to do actually 3D n equals 4 sigma models for a while. Let's just say that they're given just by cotangent bundles, which I'll think of as two-shifted things. So for those of you who are paying attention, or actually, sorry, I'll say, they're just given by cotangent bundles. So this is a holomorphic symplectic variety. Or hyperkähler, if you like to work in real geometry. Okay, so let's look at like the B twist. So we've said that QB gives me a twist of 3D n equals 4. And so the equations of motion in this twist in the 3D B twist on a 3-manifold, although it's most interesting there's two versions of this theory and I'm just trying to decide which one to tell you about. Let me just do the easier one. So there's one that's just defined on arbitrary 3-manifolds, and this one is actually just a slight generalization of the B model. It's actually just maps from this 3-manifold Durham into T star 2 of X. So there's some Z2 grading problem in this theory, and it shows up here. So there's this weird. Like you might be annoyed that this cotangent bundle just changed like what degree things were living in. But if you only remember the Z2 grading, these spaces are the same. Okay, so then now, like one thinks that this thing should give you some TQFT from the space of three cobordism, from the three cobordism category into 2-cat. And like one can like try and use this ansatz to get like a first approximation as to like what this theory is going to be about. Okay, so let's first try and ask ourselves, like, what are the local operators? Okay, so let's try and figure out what I would need to look at in this dimension. So in this dimension, I'm in 3D. So a local operator is an insertion at a point, So if I look at the link around a point, I'm going to see a two-sphere. And so what I want to do is I want whatever my theory is supposed to assign to a two-sphere. And again, there's always this implicit crossing with some real directions, ought to be the geometric quantization of maps from the two-sphere Durham into T star two of X. And it's a fact that when this thing is a scheme, that you can rewrite this thing as just T star of T star 2 of X. This holds when I have a scheme. And when X is a scheme. And then in that case, then that would tell you that the geometric quantization is just functions on T star 2 of X, which is pretty boring. Okay, so let's see like what else like one could learn. So like one can try and learn about lines. So here you should do the same sort of a story. So you should look at this three-dimensional space, some plane where you pick out a line. So now the link of the line is going to be a circle. And so now, like, you know, you would do this same rewriting. So there was an implicit rewriting that I was supposed to do there. But you could implicitly rewrite this space as being, you know, S1 times S1. So you can think of like this whole space as being fibered over an S1, an R times R0 in such a way that this green R goes to this line here. So what this thing tells you is that you should expect that studying the line operators in my 3D theory should be related to studying boundary conditions in a 2D theory. But if I do this rewriting trick, the target now will be maps from a circle. So what this thing is it's exactly like what you might guess, Z of S1, which is the geometric quantization maps from S1 Durham into T star 2 of X. One can pull this T star through. So there's actually two. So maybe this is like a good time to like introduce these kind of things. So sometimes there's like more than one way that you can rewrite something as a cotangent bundle. And then you might get like two different answers from your geometric quantization. So one way that you could rewrite this thing is you can definitely rewrite this thing as the one-shifted tangent bundle to maps from the circle into X, which we've decided, the loop space, which we've decided is T minus 1 of X. But maybe I'll write it as maps from the circle. And that's going to give us one way, one category. The other thing you can do is it turns out that you can, in this case, again, when this one only makes sense when you've got a scheme, so this one's like pretty canonical, or exists a lot of the time. In this other case, you can rewrite this thing as actually T star 1 of T star 2 of X. So what I used here is this thing is the minus 1 shifted tangent bundle of this thing, but then using the symplectic form, I can rewrite it this way. And so this thing like gives you then like two different answers. Yeah, so this is about changing what happens in geometric quantization when you change the polarization. So this thing tells you that your options for the category of lines are basically you could attempt to look at Q co of T star 2 of x, or you could attempt to look at Q co of T minus 1 of x. But then you read Benz v. Nadler, and then you learn that these two things are dual. So, like, in fact, like, I got two different descriptions, but, like, they're the same category.
Sorry, what are
K and T? Kazul dual. Sorry. So maybe this would be BZ Nadler. And the experts in the audience will know that, like, I've sort of, like, lied about the functional analysis that I need in order to make this work, but...
So the geometric quantization story that I know from before I learned about categories is that, like, the position of momentum representations were Fourier dual.
That's right. And so I'm saying that the categories, yeah, so the moral that we've learned is that, like, in ordinary quantum mechanics, we learned that, like, L2 of position space and L2 position space, that these two things are related by the Fourier transform. In fact, we've even learned more. There's actually like another polarization that one can do when you can look at sufficiently nice functions, I won't say exactly what kind, on C, like that are like somewhat holomorphic. And it turns out that these things are related by like the Bargmann-Siegel transform. But like actually, in fact, like all these things are the same. And what I'm saying is that in the categorified story, so these things are all just different polarizations, which different ways of writing your thing is a cotangent bundle. And the categorified story, Fourier transform, gets replaced by Kazul duality. And this will make Benz V very happy because he only knows about one kind of transform anyway, and he'll be happy to know that they're all the same. so that's like, so this is the expectation, like of like the kind of thing you should see. Yeah.
So in the story that I knew before any categories, there was this sort of interesting thing with the Fourier transform.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't square to the identity, it squared to minus the identity.
Yeah.
And this is because of somehow I'm supposed to say the word metaplane. Is there a similar story here?
So I've not been able to figure out what metaplectic could mean in this case. I haven't been able to make sense of like what metaplectic could mean. And I think there are multiple Kazul dualities, like that. Like you don't have to choose one. There are ones that'll square like four times. Well, I mean, the problem is like you can't compose these, right? Like with the normal one, like if you want to do the Fourier transform more than once, don't you sort of have to like use the fact that you?
Yeah,
they're both L2 of R's. Whereas like this, like it doesn't quite parse.
And if X is a sort of line and appropriate to Greek, then I think
yeah. So maybe in like one case it does, but I mean I'm just saying in general.
But this case could be necessarily relevant.
Yeah. So I don't know. Like I think that's like pretty interesting to like look at. But I've been having a lot of trouble trying to find like what the metaplectic correction is in the one shifted case. Like I don't know like what it could mean. Like that's a interesting
issue because that's an anomaly of C2.
Yeah, but I mean, like anything that could solve the problem is, I guess, what I mean. I don't know of anything that could like be the correction. Like I can see like, yeah. So anyway, I'd like to talk about this more after, but let me just keep going for a few more seconds, and then we can do it. Okay. So then, like, what's the trivial line in like both of these two cases? So like now I've got two different ways of writing my category. So I should get two different ways of writing the trivial line And we better hope that Kazul duality exchanges those two ways, otherwise my life is very sad. Maybe like this, these are constraints on like how your onslaughts could work. So let's just slightly re-examine this guy. So now, like rather than using S0 including into the interval, I should use S1 including into the two disk. And then now I should look at this Lagrangian that I'm going to get in two different ways. And then I should hope that those two different ways get exchanged by, sorry?
Those are on the nose equal when x is a line of degree 3.5.
Okay, well, we can try it. But I don't know about the metaplectic. This is a very helpful comment, but I don't know the answer. So like one can like try and like do the trivial line. Okay, so now what should one do? Okay. So one gets maps from S1 to T star 1 of x, and then now gets maps from the disk into this, but that's just gonna be nothing. Oh, sorry, 2. Sorry, did I do this right? Yeah. So in one of my polarizations, this is a very nice Lagrangian. So one of my polarizations was I could write this thing as T star 1 of T star 2 of x. So then in this particular polarization, this thing just becomes the inclusion of, this thing actually ends up matching with the inclusion of the zero section. So that is a conormal. So that tells me that in this model, the version of the trivial line I should get should just be the structure sheaf. That sounds pretty nice. But if I try and do this thing in the other polarization, I claim that what this thing actually goes to is I should have checked this a second ago. But it's supposed to go to the conormal to the inclusion of x into the loop space. Like it's supposed to go into the inclusion of the constant loops. Yes, so there's basically like the maps that include over the disk, sorry, that extend over the disk. And you should take the conormal of that space inside the space of all maps. Which also sounds very much like the trivial line. Right, like basically, like that was the way that I defined this thing in the first place. You're supposed to just restrict the maps on the disk to the circle. And so I claim that you could, in this other polarization, it comes out looking like the conormal to that obvious thing. But I've lost the T star, or I've pulled the T star out and it's become normal. So I'm sorry, so some of you probably can't see this. Okay, and so then like one can like try and quantize like this thing, and like you think that like maybe, like what you'll get is the structure sheaf of x, and indeed.
That's like the push forward along the zero section of
these. Yeah, so basically, right, this thing is supposed to be, so this thing is, so this T star minus 1 of x is thought of as like the loop space. And when you think of the loop space, the constant loops like are the inclusion of the zero section here. So the thing that I'm getting, and so the thing I'm getting in the end is just the structure sheaf of x sitting inside of this cotangent bundle. And indeed, like these two things like are exchanged by Kazul duality. Now, there's something actually really funky. So I actually kind of lied to you. Like, if you actually like go through and do this computation very carefully and check the functional analysis, you'll find it's not quite right. And the thing that you'll actually find is that when I did the geometric quantity, so when you compute Hom's, basically the natural polarization here does not match the natural, sorry, the natural polarization here does not match the natural polarization here. And so they'll be, you'll be off by some factor of a canonical bundle somewhere in here. So I'm gonna leave that as like an exercise, but there's like something, there's something I've lied about. And, but like what it is it's something about you didn't, you naively thought that the polarizations, that there's some polarizations that got matched and they really didn't. And you have to track the, and if you wanna get this thing to hold, you actually have to quantize with the, your Lagrangians with respect to the same polarization on both sides. Otherwise, it's not true. Okay, so this is kind of cool. So we, I guess we've already decided like what like goes on a point.
So do you get some kind of a random monoidal structure of the line defects?
So that's like not obvious in this perspective.
Yeah.
Well, although it does end up just being like the tensor, well, yeah, so it's not obvious in this perspective. It is obvious in this loop space perspective because I actually do have a map from the pair of pants.
Yes.
And if you quant, if you like try and like figure out like what this map should be, it ends up being something about like convolution of loops.
And this disk is the identity.
Yeah, and this disk is the, and this thing is the identity in there. And up to, and like up to like first order, like it just looks like the tensor product over here. Yeah, so that's like kind of like weird. Okay, so I think that we've learned everything useful that we can from this example. Oh, let me tell you how to do one other computation. So like now, like one could try and ask the question, well, how much time do I have? Maybe I should ask. Negative six.
Minus 20 minutes.
Oh, minus 20 minutes. Okay, so then let me tell you then what the last thing. So if one looks at, so if like one looks at like the A model in this case, sorry, the 3D A twist, because I promised I would tell you about BFN, so I'll do it for 1 second. So what this thing ends up looking like is it ends up looking like the space of maps from C across a one manifold, where this thing is deromed and this thing is not, into X derom. So it like ends up like looking like this thing, which is like pretty weird.
What is C in this case?
C is just any curve, any algebraic curve.
Oh, thanks.
But actually, like I don't know, but the general A twist, but this is like maybe this thing actually depends on the algebraic structure. I just don't want to exactly like what this is. And so one can try and ask, like, what is the category of local operators in this theory? And like what one finds is you're like, okay, well I should go ahead and just put my theory on a circle, or sorry, on a circle, on a sphere, and then I'll be done. But here the sphere, like because like this thing is like partially holomorphic, one has to use a funny model for the sphere. So instead of using the circle, the holomorphic version of the circle is you need to take the disk, union the disk over the punctured disk. This thing kind of looks like this. So when I say the disk, I mean spec of power series. When I say the punctured disk, I mean spec of Laurent series. And then like basically one can glue these two disks together at everywhere except for one point. And I claim that this is the holomorphic version of the sphere. But then like one, what one immediately finds is if I want the local ops, I should just take the functions on the maps from the from this bubble into X derom, But in fact, you can pull the Dirac out, and then this thing just ends up just being saying, take the cohomology. And then this is like what the prescription that BFN gave for what the local operators are, and they got, you know, very famous. Well, they were already very famous. But it's been like a huge, you know, industry. But you can just sort of read it off once you figure out like what the equations of motion are in the theory. Like it just sort of spits out from this general like yoga. Like and like the point is that like once you can write down like the equation of motion for a theory, you can just proceed very naively in order to guess like a lot of the structure of the theory just using this mechanism. Okay, sorry. And you know, if you're real good, you can do geometric Langlands this way. Read Phil's paper with Chris.
Let's take just to begin.